Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, one and all, and welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. So glad you're with me tonight. It's brought to you by a wonderful group, Canines with a Cause. This is a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. Be sure and check out their website at caninswithacause.com. Okay, everybody, get ready. I'm giving you fair warning. I'm going to talk dirty. If you don't want to hear it, put your fingers in your ears. Here we go. Phone sex, masturbation, humiliation, bondage, stalking. No, I'm not talking about Paris Hilton's latest date. I'm talking about a trial. All of these sexual topics are part of a defense, the defense of Jodi Arias. Jodi Arias has been on the stand for 6 days. The prosecution has yet to cross-examine her, and we're just getting started here, folks. 6 days, and I don't know about you, but I cannot stop watching this train wreck of a human being. Arias thinks she can trash-talk her ex-boyfriend, Travis Alexander, enough. If she does it enough, the jury will buy her defense, self-defense theory. Now, listening to what Jodi Arias is talking about would normally cost $3.99 a minute, but we're getting it free via CNN. Okay, I really am not trying to make light of this horrific crime, not at all. I'm just trying to show you how repulsive this woman is, and I just sometimes use sarcasm as a way to get my message across. She is not an abused woman like she wants us to think she is. Sorry, she's someone with major self-esteem issues. Otherwise, why would she keep going back to a boyfriend who was only using her for sex? Now, by all accounts, Travis Alexander was a good guy. He was a practicing Mormon, but there was something about Jodi Arias that he couldn't resist. As people have said over and over, Jodi was his dirty little secret. So I'm not saying that Travis Alexander's innocent, but he certainly did not deserve to get murdered. This was two adults together doing what they wanted to do. Now, here's what scares me. What if this is like the Anthony trial all over again? What if the jury says, we can't say she's lying because who knows? Only she and Travis know, and he's gone, therefore the law says I must find her not guilty if I can't say reasonably she did the crime. Could happen. That's what scares me to death. Now, the good news is the trial is in Arizona, and Arizona is not as wacky as Florida when it comes to criminal trials anyway. Hopefully this jury will have some common sense here. Now, Arias is accused of stabbing her Mormon boyfriend 27 times, shooting him, and slicing his throat from ear to ear. This would be a really bad rated NC-17 horror movie if it wasn't true, and it is horrific. Let's talk to two women now with incredible common sense. I admire them both, Atlanta attorney and former prosecutor Holly Hughes and Cheryl McCollum, director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Ladies, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go with Cheryl first. Cheryl, do you think Jodi Arias is an abused woman?
She was used, but I don't think she was abused. I think she was a willing participant, and she wanted the relationship to be more than it was ever going to be. She wanted to be married, and he was not going to marry her, but he was going to play house with her for a little while.
And Holly Hughes, what's your take on this? Is there any way she can claim to actually be an abused woman?
Well, I think what they're going to do in this case, Trish, because I'm not buying the physical abuse. Now, the emotional abuse is a better argument if you look at some of the texting back and forth. You know, clearly, he did not want her the way she wanted him. And I think what the defense is going for here, they're just trying to get her off death row. They're going to follow up with a domestic violence expert. They haven't named this person yet, but they keep touting her as the premier DV expert in the country. And what they're going to try to do is everything that Jodi has testified to, they're going to ask that DV expert to interpret for the jury and say, okay, sometimes emotional abuse is that bad. And so if something got physical that day, this whole host of emotional abuse is what caused her to feel as if today might be the day he gets physical and I need to defend myself. So that's where they're headed with this. They're just trying to save her life. They're hoping, there's no way, we all said that with Casey, right? There's no way you're going to get 12 people to say she's not guilty, but I think what they're trying to do is get maybe a compromise verdict of a manslaughter, something less of a, you know, than a murder one, so that she still has a chance at getting out. I think that's where they're going.
And Holly Hughes, Atlanta attorney and former prosecutor, do you think that that is a good possibility here? I know it's impossible to read a jury, but you've done this long enough, so you can kind of get a feel. Do you think it's possible that they may find her guilty of a much lesser charge?
I think it is possible. And the reason it's possible, there's a huge difference between this and, well, there's a couple of huge differences that I want to point out. Number one, in Casey Anthony, you had an absolutely innocent child. There is just no way on earth anybody can make up a reason that a three-year-old deserves to be murdered. In this case, what they're going for is, hey, you know, these were two adults, but this guy was emotionally abusive. He was this, he was that. And it only takes one to hang a jury. So if just one person on that jury either was emotionally abused themselves or knows somebody who was emotionally abused, then I think that's enough to get that jury fighting. I think it's probably going to break down like gender lines in the jury room. I really do. I think the men are going to be like, she's crazy. She knew what she was in for. Let's just stick it to her first degree all the way. I think some of the women are going to be like, okay, he didn't deserve to die, but he sort of, you know, brought this outlash on himself, and you know, everybody's going to have a heart attack when I'm saying that. No, nobody deserves to be murdered like this. But I think you might have one or two in the back who say, you know what, this is enough to drive a person over the edge, and she might have been scared that he was going to hurt her that day. So, yeah, I think it's a real possibility that either they're going to outright hang or they're going to come back and say lesser than first degree.
And I agree with you. I think that's exactly what they're going to say. And like you said, Holly, we're not saying that he deserved to die, but what people may think in the jury room, especially the women, may think, you know, he kind of created this monster. He, you know, brought her into this kind of dark, twisted sexual circle that really wasn't a part of his life.
Uh-huh.
But he... And it just kind of, what they may think is it kind of made her this way. I understand completely what you're saying. Let's go with Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl, what do you think of all of this? Do you think it's possible that they may find Jodi Arias not guilty of first-degree murder?
I would like to think that the jury's going to be a little more sophisticated, and I'll tell you why. She drove over 2,000 miles with a gun and a knife in her car. And when she first attacked him, it was when he was surrounded by three walls. He was stabbed in the shower. Now, if they understand that, then he was not in the process of attacking her. Couldn't have been.
Right.
And if you look at the sink, the answer's right there. If you look at the photograph of the sink, and your listeners can pull it up online, you see, like, a high-velocity splatter toward the back, toward the mirror. You see
mm-hmm.
a very long, you know, stretch of blood, and then you see blood just dropping, and then you see a hand smear. He had to have touched his chest, in my opinion. Then when he put his hand there to brace himself, that's what you're seeing. The high-velocity splatter, I'm assuming, is when he started to cough. When he's at the sink is when she starts stabbing him in the back. Now, listen to me. There's a lot of ways you can attack me, but walking backwards toward me ain't one of them. And as soon as she started stabbing him in the back, she lose all credibility about self-defense. She could have fled at that moment, and she didn't. Not only did she not flee, Tricia, she stabbed him 26 times. And then she slit his throat, and I can prove, I think, to your listeners, she shot him last because the shell casing, if you go to that crime scene photograph, the shell casing is laying on blood. He was already bleeding when she shot him. That is not a person that is attacking you. And furthermore, she screwed up when she drove to the other fella's house. She didn't have a busted lip. She didn't have a black eye. She didn't have scratches about her face and neck. She had no visible injury whatsoever. Where's the attack, Tricia? Where's the violent episode? Exactly. And I think the jury's going to see that. And I want to defer to Holly here, but I think if I were a prosecutor, what I would do is I would pull a Jack Mallard like he did with Wayne Williams. And when I cross-examine her, my entire goal is to get her so pissed off she erupts, because it's there.
What do you think? What do you think, Holly? Do you think that's going to happen? That's very interesting, Cheryl. I never thought of that. Let's kind of back up a little bit. Hold on, Holly. Cheryl, you're referring to Wayne Williams when the child killer, right? He's on the stand, and the prosecutor, his whole goal, he's been told, if I remember correctly, by the FBI, get Wayne Williams mad. And he got him really mad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I forgot what he said. He shouted out something.
Right. And so what I'm saying is, Holly and I both have worked with Jack. He's brilliant. He is awesome. But I think that she's been on the stand now for 7 days. Keep talking, sugar. I wouldn't object to anything. Let her talk. Let her say everything she wants to say. Because, again, Tricia, she's already admitted my orgasm was fake. My hair is fake. My glasses are fake. My voice is fake. Everything is fake about her. Her alibi was fake. Her original 2 or 3 stories was fake. Everything's a lie. Everything is just this facade. And frankly, the phone sex is no good. It's not even phone sex. It's just bizarre trying to bait him to say things because, again, she knows she's recording it. It's for her use. He doesn't even know it's being recorded. It's all a facade. It's all this just twisted, I'm going to get you, I'm going to embarrass you, I'm going to humiliate you, I'm going to kill you. It's what she did.
That's a very interesting point, how everything about Jodi Arias, physically, emotionally, and that comes out of her mouth, is absolutely fake. We're talking with Cheryl McCollum and also Holly Hughes. Holly is the Atlanta attorney and former prosecutor. And Cheryl McCollum is the director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We're talking about the trial that everybody's talking about. It's so salacious and embarrassing. It's the Jodi Arias trial. She's on trial for first-degree murder in the death of her boyfriend, or she thought it was her boyfriend anyway, Travis Alexander. You know, I was trying to watch TV with my son, and we flipped over to the trial. I lasted about 2 seconds with him in the room. I was so mortified. was delighted that I was embarrassed and just, you know, typical teenager. But, Holly, what do you think about what Cheryl said about, do you think as a prosecutor you would do what was done to Wayne Williams in the Atlanta child murder case, get her so angry so that people can see this flash of horrific anger and know that she's capable of this?
Here's the thing about Jodi Arias. She is ridiculously intelligent. I mean, she is one of the smartest defendants I have ever seen on the stand, and she is fighting to save her own life. I don't think that's going to work. And I think that Juan Martinez, the lead prosecutor in this case, runs a real risk if he tries to beat up on her and bait her, and here's why. Because she's been on the stand for 6 long days telling about how everybody in her life has abused her. Her parents abused her, her mama, her daddy. Every man she's ever been with has abused her. She's just a doormat for everybody, and she's so nice, according to her testimony, that she just puts up with this and keeps going back for more abuse. So if you try to bait her, you run the risk of looking like one more man beaten up on poor Jodi. And if the jury is not sympathizing with her, that might turn the tide. He has to be very, very careful here. I think she is so smart, she's not going to lose it on the stand, no matter what you say to her. And you got battle fatigue, man. She is exhausted. So trying to get a rise out of a very exhausted person is hard to begin with. And I think they run the risk of what Jeff Ashton did. He was so aggressive and so good at what he did that the jury held it against him. It looked like he was beating up on an inept defense lawyer, and they didn't like that. When a prosecutor makes it too personal, you run the risk that the jury's going to feel like, here you are, this big, bad power of the state with all this money and all this investigative power, and you're beating up on this poor girl. So I would not go there with her. I wouldn't even try it. I would just be very even-keeled, be just as calm as she is, and take copious notes on every single lie. And everything that Cheryl just said, I would put on a huge board that at the end of the trial, my closing, I put it up and go exactly through that list. It's brilliant. Maybe they're listening. Hopefully they're listening. Fake hair, fake glasses, fake voice, you know, fake this, fake that. Everything about her is fake, so you can't trust a word she says. But I don't think he's going to rile her. I really don't. I'm not a psychiatrist, but if she's a psychopath, she's the best I've ever seen.
Exactly. I agree with you. She is absolutely it's amazing to watch in a weird sense, and I don't mean that as a compliment. She is a master manipulator. Holly Hughes, when do you think the cross is going to start? I'm not even sure where they left off on Friday. It's kind of all a big blur now. She's just been on the stand forever. It seems
right.
Like any idea when it might start?
Well, it's probably, I would say, Tuesday or Wednesday, either late Tuesday or Wednesday, because remember, they haven't even gotten up to the point where she describes the fight where he allegedly attacked her and she had to react by defending herself. So, I mean, that is going to be, I got to give kudos to this defense attorney, because there's two things they did that's really smart. They didn't have the female do the direct to her, even though she's the lead, because then it looks like, oh, this is just a bunch of, you know, man-hating women beating up on guys. So it's brilliant to have the man do it, and the man being up there sounding so sympathetic and, oh, poor Jody, how did that make you feel? So, you know, that's a stroke of genius. And the second thing he's doing, which is really hard to do as a trial lawyer, no matter what side you're on, is take your time. You want to get every single thing out. You don't want to rush. You don't want to just get right to it. You want to make sure that if you've got a defense or you've got a prosecution you're putting up, that you put everything you've got in front of that jury. And that's what he's doing. He is taking his time. She'll say something vague. He'll say, well, let's clarify that. What did you mean when you said, he doesn't let her get away with a half-assed answer. You know, well, tell me what that, you know, meant to you, and why did you think that's what Travis was thinking? And he's really just drawing it out. But they're getting close to the time of the actual attack, the actual murder. And so what they're going to do is take their time through that, continue to work slowly. I would say probably late Tuesday or early Wednesday we'll see the cross-examination begin.
That's going to be something that we are all absolutely waiting for. We have a question from our chat room, and I will ask both ladies this question. When is emotional abuse justified for using deadly force? Cheryl McCollum, let's start with you. Is it ever justified?
Emotional
abuse?
No.
Never justified for deadly force. What do you think, Holly Hunter? I'm calling you an actress. She won an Academy Award. You should be flattered. Holly Hughes, do you think there's ever a time when emotional abuse is justified in even just violence?
No, and legally speaking, they are not going to be able to make that argument because it's an inaccurate statement of the law. What they're hoping is that the jury buys these alleged physical incidents. Oh, he broke my finger. Oh, he threw me to the foot of the bed. Oh, he blocked me from going. They're hoping that just one person on that jury believes these stories that Jody's telling. And then what they're going to do is when they get to the part about that day, she's going to claim that he physically came after her. You know, she says she dropped his brand new camera. They were taking pictures in the shower. And so that's the reason that it happened in there. So the question becomes, why do you take the knife and the gun into the shower? You know, so that's where the breakdown is going to, that's where they're going to be able to trip her up. Because, you know, if they have a jury member who believes, yes, he was physically abusive, he was a bully, you know, and so that would be a correct statement of the law, that you can defend yourself, and he's a lot bigger than her. So, you know, was he going for the knife when she grabbed it and stabbed him? And one of the interesting things about the autopsy report, which, you know, I've read the entire thing and then I've looked at the diagram, you know, the ME's always diagram the wounds where they are in the body. And we keep saying 29 stab wounds, but a lot of those are nicks, like a little cut on the bottom of his foot, a little cut on the back of his leg. Well, she's not cutting him on the bottom of the foot to kill him. So what they're going to say is this proves that this was a frenzied attack, that this wasn't an execution, or she would have just shot him in the head and been done with it and left. They're going to say where the stab wounds are. That's what makes this a frenzied attack. She's in a fight for her life. He was the aggressor. And they're hoping that somebody believes that he was physically abusive, because emotional abuse, you legally cannot use self-defense for emotional abuse only.
Holly, if I can just go ahead, Cheryl McCollum.
I was going to say, the other thing that I hope they do is say if this was actually an abused woman that was attacked and she defended herself, she wouldn't have put the camera in the washing machine and tried to destroy evidence. She wouldn't have drug his either dead or dying behind back into the shower. She would not have attempted to clean up the crime scene. She would have called the police for some help, and she would not have driven to another man's house for another quasi-liaison. She wouldn't have rented a car. She wouldn't have gas cans that she borrowed from yet another man, so she wouldn't have to stop and buy gasoline. She wouldn't have dyed her hair so that somebody might not recognize her. I mean, seriously, that this is so completely different than Casey Anthony, it's not funny. Casey, we never knew how that child died. That was the entire issue. And I said on your show she would walk. Because if we can't agree whether it's an accident or murder, then you can't convict her of murder. Here, we know exactly what happened to this young man. We know it. And it, whether he was into kinky sex or not, has no relevance whatsoever. There is nothing in those tapes that sounds to me like he is abusive. Sexually adventurous, yeah, but not abusive.
I absolutely agree. There's absolutely nothing in there that says he's abusive. That's what's so shocking.
Nothing.
You pointed out something that is, I think, extremely important, and that is the shell casing from the gun is on top of the blood. So she was shooting at him after all of the stabbing and the blood, and it's everywhere, and it's grotesque. Then she shoots him. Right there, that just shows you, in addition to, you know, driving those thousands of miles and having a loaded gun and all of, all of that. I mean, there should be so much that just points to premeditation. Right there, everything, you might be able to say, well, that's a judgment call, that's a judgment call. But you have that bullet on top of that blood, and that means she took the time after he's laying there probably dead, or very close to it, to shoot him. And that just screams not, you know, somebody who's afraid for their life, but somebody who wants to punish somebody. It's overkill. But, Cheryl, let me ask you this. Can the defense spin it and say she was in fear for her life and she just went crazy? Can't they just say that?
Again, stab wounds to the back and you leave and go get another weapon. And then you start to clean up the crime scene. You hide evidence. You take, you know, the gun and whatnot with you, which I don't think has been recovered. And then you put the thing in the washing machine and turn it on, thinking that's going to damage, you know, the evidence that's clearly on there. And then you say, that's not me in the photograph. Come on, girl. This is not somebody that, in a frenzy, defended herself, where you hear somebody shooting somebody, then they reload and shoot them some more. Mm-mm. No, ma'am.
Yeah.
You stabbed him in the back. When he was dying, you drug him back to the shower, went and got the gun, put it right up to his head, and fired a shot to the left side of his head. After you cut his throat.
Those pictures have given me nightmares. And, you know, I'm certainly not a professional. It's not like I see these pictures every day. But I'm pretty, you know, I can take a lot. And those pictures, I think of Travis's parents, and I can't even talk. I just get a lump on my throat. And they, the fact that his parents and family have to sit there and listen to
right.
to his whole being be destroyed like this just must
right.
be awful for them. Holly Hughes, you think the only chance that she has, that Jodi Arias has, is to not get the death penalty, right?
Right. I think that death is probably off the table at this point because she's been on the stand long enough that they have humanized her to this jury, and somebody on there is thinking, well, she seems so sweet and nice, and she's so intelligent, and this is not a woman who would plan a cold-blooded murder. Somebody on there is thinking she's redemptive at this point in some time. So I think that the death penalty is off the table already. What the defense is trying for now is something less than a first-degree murder charge, because then she would have a chance at parole if they come back on something like a manslaughter, a heat of passion killing, you know? So I think that's probably what they're trying for at this juncture.
Got it. I want to throw something out there and see what you all think. About her, this comes from the chat room, I think it's a very interesting question. When you listen to Jodi Arias talk about domestic abuse, it's almost like it's from a textbook. He promised he would change. I went back to him. He apologized. He made me feel so loved. Do you think the prosecution can maybe prove that, hey, she's been studying up on this? Cheryl, we'll start with you.
I think everything that comes out of her mouth is rehearsed. I think that's an excellent question, and I think what, again, I'm not a prosecutor, and I will, again, defer to Holly, but one thing I would do is the statement she made on 48 hours, no jury will ever convict me, I would play, that would be the last thing they heard her say. I'd play it, because she's playing you, just like she played Travis, just like she played the police. Watch the interrogation tape when she says, oh, my God, what happened to him? I wasn't even there. We got your bloody fingerprint there. Okay, I was there, but we were attacked by two people, a man and a woman. But I was able to escape. You were able to escape, but you didn't call for help. You just left him there to die. Yeah, there was nothing more I could do for him. Really?
Oh.
Okay, so then they go at her again, and they say, we've got you. This, you were there while he was bleeding. There was no other two people. There was no other trace evidence, fingerprints, footprints, nothing. Okay, I was there, but it was self-defense.
Right. Her lies just
it's
keep...
all a yeah. lie. It's all this Jodi's world. And I agree with Holly. There's no question she's intelligent. There's no question about that. But she made some huge mistakes. She even said, if I was going to kill him, I would have worn gloves. So what she's really telling you is, darn it, I should have worn gloves. But she thought by killing him in the shower, she was getting rid of trace evidence. She thought all of the evidence from her would be washed away down that drain. She was not counting on, when she stabbed him in the chest first, him being able to get up. And when he got up, she freaked out. And that's when she went crazy. Because she wasn't going to let that happen.
Absolutely. Have they brought up, or do you think they will bring up, anything in her background growing up that can suggest she was really abused? I know that she said she was. But we haven't heard from anybody from her side, have we yet, that said she was abused, you know, father was cruel to her, mom was mean, you know, little brother ate her cake. I mean, you know, who knows? Is there anything in her background to suggest she really was abused?
I'll jump in on that one. I don't think they're going to do it because I can't see her family members taking the stand and admitting that they abused her. And from all the reports we're hearing, they've only got like one or two witnesses after her. My understanding is they're going to call her psychologist or, you know, psychiatrist, whomever she's been in counseling with, and they're going to call the DV expert. So I don't think we're going to see any of her family members take the stand and back her up. I think they're going to rely heavily on their experts. So they're going to ask whoever it was that she saw for counseling, you know, does she present as an abused person? Do you think she was abused in your professional opinion after talking to her? And they're going to look to bolster her testimony and her credibility, as it were, with these experts saying, well, yes, well, why? Well, this behavior pattern explains this, and that behavior pattern explains that. And I think that's where they're going with the experts.
Ollie, as a former prosecutor, can a juror take that and say, okay, in Jodi Arias' case, they have the psychologist who says, yes, she presented the classic symptoms, but they didn't prevent anybody from her life. They don't need to present anyone from the family. It could be a friend. It could be somebody who witnessed anything. They haven't brought anything to me as a juror that backs up the fact that she was abused. Can the lack of a witness be used in jury deliberations?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing, there's a jury charge. The judge is going to charge the jury on a lot of things, but one of the things he's going to charge on is credibility of witnesses. And he's going to tell them, you and you alone, jury people, are the determiners, the sole determiners of the credibility of a witness. So you can believe all of their testimony, you can believe none of their testimony, or you can believe parts of their testimony. So as a prosecutor, what I would say is, okay, who did the psychiatrist talk to determine that she was abused? Her. Okay, who do we know is a big fat liar? Her. And I would just say to the jury, why didn't they call her mom to say, yeah, I beat her? Why didn't they call her father to the stand? They have the capability to subpoena witnesses, ladies and gentlemen. You saw them subpoena the doctors. You saw them, you know, bring them into court. So why wasn't somebody else besides Jody Arias called to that stand? And you can absolutely argue that. And you can say, you know, ask yourselves why. You can't say what they would have testified to, but you can certainly raise the question to the jury, if this was really true, in a death penalty case, why would you not take the stand and defend your daughter? Why would you not say she's telling the truth about that? So there's two things, the credibility of witness that the jury gets to decide, and they can believe the psychiatrist. And I would say, hey, you can believe the psychiatrist all day long when he says, Jody told me she was abused. But bear in mind, it's coming from somebody who we know is a proven liar.
Absolutely.
And that's just it. And Cheryl McCollum, here's the thing, as Holly Hughes so excellently pointed out, everything that the defense is bringing up is based on what Jody Arias is telling them. And
mm-hmm.
you can't believe a word she says. But as we know, juries are notorious for being unpredictable. So I don't think we can ever say that something is a slam dunk. We can't say that she won't be found not guilty. I mean, there's a slight chance of it, but it could happen. Cheryl, what do you think the prosecution is going to do first off, right out of the gate? What do you think they'll do? Just your ideas.
They're going to go step by step through every lie they know to be a lie. Just
mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4. And the more she tries to answer it, I think the worse she's going to look, you know. And I think the other thing they're going to do is they're going to walk through some of the things. So you only knew this guy 8 weeks, and you decide to convert to the Mormon faith. I mean, that's not like going from Methodist to Presbyterian. I mean, this is a little bit of a jump. And you did that. You moved 2,000 miles to be near him when he didn't ask you to do that. And then you abruptly moved back. And then you, again, drove the 2,784 miles with a gun and knife in your car. They're just going to walk right through it. So the jury starts to see this picture. Yeah, that is weird. Yeah, that is bizarre. You know, she's the one calling a lot of these shots. And I think what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to break down for the jury, okay, here's the deal. You got a 26-year-old woman here, unmarried, who wants to be married. In her mind, that's the end-all, be-all, right? So she finds
mm-hmm.
herself a 30-year-old virgin. Surely, I can get this guy hooked on me, right? She
right.
puts everything on him, Tricia, she can. She admits it. Oral, anal, vaginal. I dressed up. I have role-played. I have been at your beck and call. Anything you want to say to me, you can say to me, you want to tie me up to a tree and come at me? I will say, that's debasing, but I like it. Who does
yep,
that?
Yep. Nobody.
But it's all said and done. What does she find out? He still don't want you. And all of his friends have said, there's something off. There's something weird. I don't trust her. I don't like her. Why does she tell everybody you're, you know, her boyfriend? Who is this girl? So he takes the relationship underground, and still, he's taking somebody else on the cruise. And when that happened, she lost her mind. She went there to give that man one last chance, either marry me or die. And when he said he's going on the cruise with the other girl, she left him right there in the shower. Didn't bother to cover him, didn't bother to call for help, and had the nerve to call his cell phone and leave him a message like he was still alive. An abused woman, my ass.
Yeah, exactly. Abused woman, my ass. I think that's going to be my bumper sticker for the Jodi Arias trial. A couple of things here. I want to get back just a moment to the abuse. Obviously, something happened to her to make her, she's some sort of sociopathic liar, histrionic personality. There's a million labels you can apply to her. Something did happen to her to make her this way. It doesn't necessarily need to be horrible abuse. It could be something like she was maybe felt like she didn't get enough attention when she was growing up, when she was a little kid, so she made up big stories and she got more attention that way. There's all kinds of things that could happen to a person, but I think it's very important in a case like this that maybe after everything is said and done, we really try and find out what happened because we need to understand the psychological makeup of somebody like this so we can prevent this from happening again. That's just me on my soapbox, and now I will jump down. Let's go to Holly Hunter. Holly, your thoughts on what Cheryl said. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Oh, quickly, one other comment. Cheryl, what you said about the Mormonism is absolutely right. I'm very familiar with Mormonism. I live in Utah. I'm not LDS myself. Arizona is a heavily populated Mormon state. They will know it is a very big commitment of the heart and soul and mind to become a Mormon.
No question.
It is. You have to, you know, go through the temple and you have to meet with the bishop and you have to agree that the husband is the man of the house and you know, after you die, you'll meet up in the celestial heavens. I mean, it's a big, big deal. So, again, like you so brilliantly pointed out, everything about her is a lie. This is just another lie to try and get her a husband. And I want to go to Holly, too. Holly, your thoughts on everything that Cheryl said, I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that maybe the state played too much up about the Mormonism because the risk that they're running right now is, you know, they played him up, oh, he was such a great guy, and he was so blameless, and he was this, that, and the other thing. You know, and then you find out that while he's holding out this one facade, as it were, to the public, you know, he's an elder in the church, and he's capable of baptizing people and blah, 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 then he's doing all these things that, according to the Mormon faith, are immoral and not supposed to be happening. They're not allowed. And what, you know, they should have just kind of stayed away from that because now the defense can argue to the jury, okay, that everybody, all his friends thought he was this, but we have proof he was that because there are text messages. And this is what differentiates this case from Casey Anthony. In the Casey Anthony trial, the defense stood up an opening statement and they dropped a load of bombshells on everybody who was listening. Okay, she died in the pool. Okay, George is the one that found her. She was abused by George. She was abused by Lee. All this stuff happened. There was not one iota of testimony to back up anything the defense said. But in this particular case, we do have Travis's own text messages. We do have Travis's own emails. We have him calling her nasty names like a three-hole wonder and, you know, telling her, yeah, you know, remember the time we engaged in anal sex and remember this oral sex and all these things that good Mormons would not be doing if they're not married to the person. So what the defense can now say is, hey, not only did Jodi Arias lie, but Travis Montgomery's entire lie, or Travis Alexander, I'm sorry, was a lie. It was an absolute lie because he played one way in public and then another in private. His friends didn't know he was doing all this. His friends didn't know he was, you know, engaging in these acts with her. So, you know, what else was he hiding? So the fact that Jodi lied, well, okay, that's good, slam dunk, the prosecution's got that evidence, but then they're going to stand up the defense and say, but Travis's whole existence was a lie. Because what he was doing behind closed doors is not what he was leading everybody else to believe he was up to. So if he lied about that stuff, maybe he was covering up being abusive, too. They've given him a great opening.
That's a very good point. I would hope that the prosecution would come back with it. And I love the fact that you brought that up, because I wouldn't have thought of that. That's why you're the prosecutor and I'm not. But I hope the prosecution would come back and say, look, you know, this guy was a virgin. We're not saying what he did was right, but he was conflicted. It wasn't that he was a liar. He was very conflicted. He had his good Mormon side, and then he had his nasty little secret Jody side. He was a very conflicted had difficult times ahead of him. And this doesn't mean he was abusive. It just means he was conflicted. I hope they would do that, but I don't know. Again, you can't get into the mind of the juror, and that's what just worries me after Casey Anthony and Cheryl McCollum. You're right. You predicted she was going to walk. Ever since then, that has just turned my world upside down when it comes to juries, and I just don't know. I'm hoping that this jury has common sense, and listening to both of you women tonight has restored my faith, because how you've presented the case against Jody Arias in the death of Travis Alexander is absolutely perfect, and I can't imagine a jury not finding her guilty of first-degree murder. My friends, we're going to have to wrap it up here, but I wanted to go to the ladies just one more time. Cheryl McCollum, tell us a little bit about the Cold Case Research Institute and where we can find out information.
Well, we've got 5 active cases right now, and as always, we can use y'all's help with Effie Mae Hall. Y'all have done a great job in the past going on her Facebook page and liking it and then adding it to your pages. We're still desperately looking for some roommates in that case that can help us out and fill in some gaps on the timeline. We're also looking at the Drew Peterson case as it relates to Stacey Peterson. And we've got a few more cases that aren't that well known, Kirsten Davis and Daphne Jones. But you can always go to the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute.org or my Facebook page and get in touch with me anytime.
And Cheryl McCollum, what you're doing is absolutely incredible. I admire what you and your students do. You have done some amazing work, and you continue to bring the truth out in these cases, and that's what's needed. And you have amazing Holly Hughes. You have hollybhughes.com. You're a former prosecutor. Tell us about your website and what you're doing.
Well, actually, Tricia, I'm doing some exciting stuff. I'm still practicing law, but I also do, you know, a lot of legal commentary. I'm on CNN every Saturday night at 5:35 with Don Lemon. And if I can just do a little promo here, this past week, I actually made the switch to acting, not just legal commentary, and filmed a scene for a new series we're trying to sell. So if they want to go to YouTube, and if they just search for Dixie Mafia Series, I actually get to play a DEA agent, which was so much fun shooting that scene. And, you know, hopefully people will check it out, put some likes on the YouTube page for us, and, you know, maybe we can get into acting as well as legal commentary.
And I would publicly tell you, she's very good in it. I saw
her. Absolutely, sure. Holly, we will put that up on Web Sleuth, so everybody will go and like that and get those network people to pull their heads out and put this on the fall schedule. That would be my goal. So if it were up to me, it would be done. And, of course, we will help you as well, Cheryl McCollum, with the Cold Case Research Institute in any way that we possibly can. Ladies, I can't thank you enough. I do appreciate you coming on. We will be checking back with you throughout this trial. And if there's ever anything we can do for you, from my radio show to Web Sleuth or Forums for Justice, you let us know. We'll be right there to help you, okay?
Sounds great. Let's all come back after the cross-examination.
Oh, that's what we're going to do. We will ask you back. That's going to be wild.
That's going to be a show, yeah. Thanks, Trisha.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Kimster, my darling, are you there? Oh, I think I just hung up on Kimster. I'm sorry. Kimster, I just hung up on you. Call back. See, this is why I should not handle any sharp instruments, any sort of drugs whatsoever, or a mouse, because I'm very dangerous with a mouse. I cut people off. But that was absolutely amazing, what Holly Hughes and Cheryl McCollum had to say about the Jody Arias trial. Everything they said was absolutely true. It was I love having them on the show, because you can just say one thing and they run off and they're there. They're on their way, and they tell us everything, and they bring about so many ideas that I don't know about you, but I never thought of. About the bullet, I did not know that about the bullet, that the bullet was laying there on top of the blood. That means that after she stabbed him and sliced him and did all those horrible things, she shot him. And that, to me, is one of the biggest key pieces of evidence. Kimster, I'm so sorry. I hung up on you.
Yes, you sure did. Am I here now?
You're here now, and all is well, and will you forgive me?
Yeah, I'll forgive you because you haven't done it before that I can recall. But if you do it again, we'll have to talk.
Okay, good. Well, I sat here and babbled like a drooling fool for a moment, but now I'm back on track. Weren't they great, Kimster? Holly Hunter and Holly. Listen to me, Holly Hughes. Well, she's an actress now. Holly Hughes and Cheryl McCollum, they're absolutely incredible. I love having those two ladies on.
Me too. You know, they're wonderful individually, and it's always such a joy to have them on the show. But to have them together, I mean, it's just always fascinating. They always come up with new information. I'll be reading a thread, and I think I pretty much know it all. And they come in, and they give us some more dirt or juice or something. I don't know. Not dirt, but information. So it's good. It's really good to have them.
Good. And thank goodness they're going to be coming back after Jody's cross-examination. That is something I cannot wait to see. But I'm telling you, my teenage son, he's going away. I'm not going to sit there and watch that with him. I am mortified that we saw 30 seconds of it together. And like I said, he cracked up because I'm like, wow, we're turning this off. And he thought that was hilarious. Of course, any time he can mortify his mother is a good day for him. So, Kimster,
yeah. It
is now time. Are you ready for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case of the Week? You're on.
Well, I'm not quite ready yet.
You're not?
No, because I want to tell you about something. Did you know there's a discussion in the private forum about a new discovery where they say they can tell that someone is a sociopath by looking at their brain?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, well, I've decided that anyone that I date is going to need a brain scan.
Very good. Me too.
Now, yes. I actually wrote that in the thread, and I'm not going to share what Steely Dan said in answer to that. So you'll have to go to the private forum and see for yourself. He really knows how to get me incensed sometimes.
He's a funny guy. He's one of our posters at Web Sleuth, and he is the best. But, Kim, sir, we're going to buy one of those machines, and we'll share it, okay?
Sounds good. And I mentioned last week that Sasquatch shared his tips in the resource center on how to make a fuzzy surveillance picture clear. Remember that?
Yes.
Well, I want to add more for our listeners today that Sasquatch also explains how we can compare Google Earth pictures to see if the terrain has been disturbed, like they did in the Mesa, Arizona murders, or was it Mesa or New Mexico? I think it was New Mexico, I'm sorry. But for example, you can compare a picture of an area taken in 2004 to a picture of the same area in 2006. I think this would be a great tool for looking for Susan Powell, don't you? Because that's desert area, it's real open. Or maybe, any other case, especially in the desert area where you can really see the earth being disturbed.
And so what you're saying is that one of our members showed us how we, just little old us here on Web Sleuth, can use Google Earth pictures to tell if the ground has been disturbed. We can do that now?
Yes. And why I'm saying the desert is I'm from the desert, and I'll tell you that desert doesn't change very often. And when part of the terrain it does appear to be different, something has occurred there, and it will last for a long time. So this is a really good tool. And, yeah, I mean, before, we only thought law enforcement could do this. But actually, true sleuthers, if you're serious about sleuthing, you can do this too now.
Exactly, and that's why you need to come on to Web Sleuth, and we'll get into how you can become a member of Web Sleuth in just a little bit. But that is one way, I'm sure, that the law enforcement agencies are looking for Susan Powell, and we'll jump right in and help them in any way we can, of course. But then, I want to stress, we never interfere with any sort of investigation. We just put it up there on Web Sleuth and let them come and read it. Okay, Kimster, now I have a feeling in my heart and soul that you are ready for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case of the Week, right?
Yes, I am. Everybody ready? Hold on to your horses and do-do-do-do-do-do.
There it is, the horn. Go for it, my dear.
There's been a lot of discussion lately about the Dylan Redwine case. He went missing from Vallecito, Colorado last November, and now just over 50 miles away from there, another young teenager named Dylan McKee, has gone missing. And I wonder if these cases are connected and this kind of leads me into this week's cold case, because this boy may have been the result of a serial killer. The sad part is that it seems like everyone has closed the book on this 12-year-old boy because the case appears to have been solved. But I say it hasn't, because Kipling Hess is still out there somewhere. Kip was last seen on his way to school in Merritt Island, Florida, on the morning of March 27, 1979. He never arrived for classes that day, and he's never been heard from again. There is one possible suspect in Kip's case. The suspect met Kip a few days prior to his disappearance at a church carnival. So sad. He assisted in the search for the missing boy, which I've heard that has happened in a few cases, like, you know, where the perp is actually assisting in the searches. Police also found a missing person flyer for Kip taped in his locker. The suspect murdered an 8-year-old Michigan boy in the 1950s and served 20 years in prison for that crime. From 1976 to 1980, he worked as a guard at the Brevard Correctional Institution in Florida. The institution housed mostly teenagers. While the suspect was working there, five local boys disappeared. One of them was a 19-year-old inmate, Charles Collingwood, who disappeared shortly after allegations were made that he had an inappropriate relationship with the suspect. He is also considered a suspect in that case, and also in the 1977 disappearance of a 12-year-old boy named Keith Fleming. None of these boys were ever found. So please go to www.websleuths.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Kipling along with a link to the thread. I am hoping that you guys out there will come up with some ideas of where he may be, even though we pretty much have a good idea of what happened to him. We still don't know where his remains are, and he still needs to come home to his family. But you can only do this if you're a member of Web Sleuth, so please join today. And Tricia, how much is it costing these days to join websleuth.com?
Oh, you know, Kim, I am so glad you asked. I was afraid you wouldn't. Oh, my flipping heck, as we say in Utah, it's absolutely free. We just need an active email address. And that's all. You choose your username and you jump right in. And once again, if you come on Web Sleuth and you don't think you have something to offer, you are absolutely wrong. Even if you post, perhaps in a cold case like we talked about tonight, just I'm thinking of you, of your family, that is enough. Because believe me, the family members that come to Web Sleuth for help, they are so grateful for anybody that posts anything on these threads. And I just want to say, if I were king, and I should be king of the universe, because then everything would be working right. You murder a kid, you're in prison for life. This scumbag that got out after murdering an 8-year-old and he only served 20 years, no, that doesn't happen in my universe. That guy stays behind bars. But then again, that's only if I were to be king. Kimster, thank you once again for a great show. I appreciate all your help. And Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Canines with a Cause. This is a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. You can check out their website at caninewithacause.com. And also remember this, please, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and the guests. And as always, you know I take no responsibility for them. This radio show is a completely different entity and stands on its own from websleuth.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. So once again, if you get your true crime panties in a wad about something I said or somebody said, don't blame any of the forums. You come back to us, to Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.